Krishna Kshetra makes a nice point here on offering the artik. It says, artik paraphernalia should be offered gracefully in a meditative mood, but not to be either too slow or too fast. Do not perform it in a showy manner, but as a humble servant of your spiritual master and the assembled Vaishnavas. Stand to the left of the altar, as viewed from the temple room, not hidden entirely from view, but also not distracting by your presence. Then generally it's like you're not like totally hidden out of the way, because then that's also the deity can't properly see. But it's not that you should plunk yourself right in the middle so that you're sure that everybody else can see you and not the deity. So that aspect should be there. But this aspect of gracefully, that is also interesting, because that may also add something to, you know, on the offering of the paraphernalia, that it's not a, you know, wouldn't be considered a problem in offering circles or that to the when one's going up through the spiritual master, the parampara, before getting the deity. Main thing is to make it look nice. Generally, a little bit more attention is given on the spiritual master than, let's say, other personalities in the parampara. So it's like they offer, you know, like that, minimum once, but at least three times. Main thing is that you're trying to fix the mind. Like that. That is what is going on. You want to fix the mind, and the proper mood is, should be coming. Then going through the acharyas, one can just show it, you know? You know, like kind of wave it in front of them. You know, as one goes up the pictures and then come to Lord Chaitanya. And then start with Krishna, the artik.
I've seen sometimes over the years that especially some item or an offering like the chamara, people sometimes try and do something really snappy with the chamara, and I've seen sometimes in the midst of it the chamara just get let go and go flying like a projectile across the altar.
Oh, really? Towards the deities? I've seen it just drop straight onto the floor.
So it seems to be.
Isn't there an Olympic sport of that? You have some kind of thing. What is it? Huh? Yeah, the hammer, yeah, and you spin it and. Like that. Yeah.
So it seems that also. That sometimes is a problem if they're trying to do something too fancy.
Yeah.
For instance, the chamara. Slips out of
their
jaws to the point that's actually
endangering
the
deities. Yeah, oh, that must be, oh yeah, especially your smaller deities. You should have it, generally from what I've seen, from those who I've seen that use it very well. You know, I can remember seeing how Srila Prabhupada would use it, or his sister, Pishima, is they would take a grip on it, and it wouldn't, they wouldn't spin it in the hand. That seemed to be something, I'm not sure where that developed, but it was something that they would take, and the chamara handle itself would spin in the hand. They would twist it with their fingers, at the same time be rotating the wrist, so it would do all kinds of funny things. But then, like you said, the tendency is to drop it, or you know, it goes flying off. No, that's the point of it is it's not its spinning that makes it special. It's that the how you say that the hair is fluffed out. So just spinning at a slow speed, because that's all you can do when you twist it in the fingers, you know. And when you're twisting it over and over in itself, meaning in circles, like from in front of you to like over your shoulder, under your, you know, down, you know, like this in a, you know, counter, or in a, yeah, I guess it would be clockwise fashion towards the deity. It means it's not, how you say, it's not like artik is in front of you, but this is on the side of you, then it just stretches it out. So generally most will think that that's the, you know, the special element. But the actual special element is that it fluffs out. Mm. You move it in such a way that the whole thing opens. You know? Like that, and then it'll close, and then you flick it in another way, it opens again. So I've seen that Prabhupada would take it and just swing it from down to up over his head, you know, in a full arm arc. It's over his head, and then when he would have it from behind his head, he would flip it forward in such a way that when it would go to in front of him, up, then it would completely open up. And then at that time his arm would come down. So it would like come up and then like open. Like that. And then Pishima would take it and like just moving from the elbow, her hand in front of her, from the left to the right, to the left to the right. But in such a way she would turn the hand. So the chamara would turn and would fly out and then would close when it got to the left, then open up and then close when it got to the right. Mm. Like that. She would do that. That was for very close proximity. And Prabhupada's is for more far proximity. Because the whole idea is when it opens like that, that's when it looks nicest. It blows the wind. And it also, scares any flies or anything like that.
It's just very safe as well.
You got a firm grip on it. Yeah. So the whole thing is just in a little bit in turning the wrist. Main thing is how you flick it, either at the top of a swing or when you're doing close by like this. I've also seen if you have a small altar, then that can be used also. Mm. I've seen one of our god sisters in Calcutta. What's her name? Sumana. I think she always uses it like that, you know, because she's a... I don't know how old she is now. But she was quite young when Srila Prabhupada was in Calcutta. There were three girls who used to come to the temple. Like that. Her? I don't remember the names. But the other two of them got married to devotees, and then she didn't. Prabhupada asked her, "You don't want to get married?" She said, "No." He said, and so Prabhupada mentioned, "Well, you know, it's more difficult if you're not married." She says, "I realize that, but no plans." Prabhupada didn't say that. I think she's still not married. She must be in her 40s now. Mm-hmm. Like that. So when she does, you know, very gracefully. But she uses that same system like Pishima uses, like that. Rather than a full arm, she just uses just from the elbow. And that, it looks very nice there. Plus the temple there, you're quite close to the altar in Calcutta. Quite close. I saw also Pishima once when she came for Julan. And she wanted to fan the deities, you know, as they'd come. You know, when they come out in the swing in the temple room, she run to fan. So she asked for an Achman cup. You know, he thought it was for doing Achman or this or that. She took a little water and poured it in the hand, made her hand wet, and then started wiping the hairs of the chamara. You know, did that a few times. So all of them, they were damp, not wet. She didn't pour water on it. She just made her hand, the palm of her hand wet, and then wiped it on the hairs. Then when you swing it, then it makes the air cooling like that. So, you know, now it's Julan time, so it's hot. So she would do that at that time, you know. Other seasons you wouldn't do that, but just when it's hot, then it would be. It's one of the ways of, yeah, interesting. The arts, you know. I think I've heard that, but I think there maybe even is a picture of that. Yeah, when he used to do bells, yeah, before the devotees knew what's going on. You know? It's interesting, he'd be up in his room offering artik, and everybody else is just sitting downstairs, just waiting for the next prasadam or kirtan, right? And then slowly introduced all these things. You know, someone told me it was very interesting. I forget who it was. Oh, yeah, it was someone was explaining about that, may have been Dayananda, about that one devotee, you know, the one that asked for the petrol?
No, it's the dish.
Yeah, and then Prabhupada asked him, how much do you want? And he said, like a dollar or something, or $5. And then Prabhupada said, then I knew he was crazy. Not because he'd asked for the petrol to light himself on fire, right, but he asked for $5 or something when it only cost, you know, 20 cents a gallon or something like that. Then, you know, this guy's nuts. He needs too much. But I think he was telling me one of his qualities was is that after the lunch, you know, especially like Sunday feast or things like that, it was a Sunday feast. Because Prabhupada would cook and do all that. Prabhupada would serve. And after everybody would finish eating and that, they'd just, you know, Hari Bol, great, far, you know, see you later, Swamiji, and split and leave Prabhupada there with a dirty apartment and dirty pots. So Prabhupada would wash them himself. And then I think this, what do you say, Striyadish? I think he would notice that and ask Prabhupada if he need help. And he would help Prabhupada clean. So that was one, you know, unique feature of him. That must have.
Yeah, Brahmananda told me early days he said Srila Prabhupada did everything. He was like, you know, he was like a mother and a father and a brother and a sister. And he was literally, you know, cleaning up behind the devotee.
Yeah. Okay, then. Now, when you're offering, then we have here that there's different, how do you say, different numbers and stuff that you'll use, or different ways that they'll be offered each item. So, now, in the Shastra, it specifically gives numbers that it must be offered for the lamp. And then Argy, I think, mentions three circles above the head. Though I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur, maybe quotes from somewhere else, mentions eight. But at least the three. And that's it. It doesn't mention anything else in the way of amount of time. Then Srila Prabhupada mentioned, I think, seven times around the body with each item. Though I think in the very beginning he said seven circles to seven parts. So there would be like the feet and then I guess the knees, and like this. So it would, you have 49 circles. You know? So, it's all right when you had a bunch of tattoo pictures or something, but then like that. But I think then it came to it was seven circles. Then so taking that, then with the lamp, it mentions four to the feet, two to the chest, and one or three times to the head. I think the Gautamiya Tantra says three. I'm not sure which one it is, but I think it's Haya Shusha. Then mentions once.
Krishna.
Is this normal?
Ramana's brother has been Ramana sent to this.
I see. Is that normally the way the door opens like that? Let's see. It's definitely only the faithful will get inside, right? Okay. So then, like that, it seems that most prefer the 4, 2, 3. And then seven times around the body. So that's what it mentions for the lamp. Then if you keep then Prabhupada's point of seven times around the body, then you kind of end up with what is mentioned here by Krishna Kshetra. You know, it's keeping the lamp thing in place, because that's all the Shastra talks about. And then it keeps that number of 7 times around the body that Prabhupada gave. So then the incense is offered 7 circles around the body. The lamps then will be 4 to the feet, 2 to the navel, and 3 to the head. Then 7 around the body. The argya would be 3 circles above the head, and then you could do 7 around the body. The cloth would be 7 times around the body. Flowers would be 7 times around the body, or sometimes it mentions it should be to the feet. So then it could be 7 to the feet. And then the chamara and the fan, you just swing some of the times, depending upon how much time is there in the artik. But it should be balanced. So now these circles with the incense, the argya, the cloth, and the flowers can actually be less if time is short. Because the main item is the lamp. Lamp should be offered in that full, that 4, 2, 3, 7. Or if you have less time than 4, 4, 2, 1, it's not going to make that much difference, the 2 to the head. Maximum you'll save is 2 seconds. You know? So now this thing of the numbers, that is only offered to the main deity. Anyone that you're going up through, taking their blessings before starting the artik for the main deity, and anyone that you're going to show it to on the way down, these numbers aren't in any way required. Because sometimes the point comes up, well, of offering up and down, it may be nice, but then who's going to stand there all day to do that? Right? But the point is who said you're supposed to stand there all day? Shastra doesn't mention anything. So this is only devotees, they create their own, you know, what do you call it? Their own religious principles. Like that. So one has to be very, very careful. So it's basically, it only recommends showing it 3 times to the spiritual master, on the way up and on the way down. And everybody else, it can just be a wave or, you know, a couple of circles, doesn't even have to be full circles, just something that you stop at each one just to concentrate long enough for that only. You know, to take their blessings like that. That's all. So then one finds that this doesn't really lengthen the artik, you know. Now if the artik, like I've seen, I saw it in Los Angeles, they had 3 altars, and they had Guru Gauranga altars, so 4 deities, then Rukmini Dwarkadish, 2 deities, and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, 3 deities. So now they wanted the artik to everybody be offering at the same speed. So then I think then they would have them do Utsav Murtis or pictures, or I think for Jagannath it was Jagannath Baladev Subhadra and either Sudarshan or Nrisingadev's picture or like that. They would do so everybody, each altar had 4 personalities that they were going to deal with. And even though it's not required, they would do this for 4, 2, 3 for everybody. Just that everybody would be doing the same speed. So in that way, you can consider it's not a problem. But as far as what's needed, then that is not necessary. So here specifically, except for the lamp, just 7 times around the body. And the lamp, then you do to the different parts of the body. And then the chamara and the fan, then you just wave them, you know, pleasantly for some time, within the how much time is needed. So that's
main deity. If you had a Radha Krishna altar, then you would do that to Krishna, but not of necessity would you offer all the circles to
Radharani. No, one can do it like that. Or one can worship them together. You know, do it for both of them together. like that.
And bony kind, and
that would be separate. Yeah, generally you would, yeah, because he's Radha and Krishna. But generally you would do that separate, Krishna Balaram. But you can also do for both of them. It just depends.
But the timing.
Yeah, if you want, if less time, then you would specifically do it for Krishna.
But if it was like home puja, then you would,
yeah,
for the main deity and then show.
Yeah, yeah, like that. It means that can be done like that.
Because all our temples, it seems to be, they may show going up, but then coming down, everyone gets the full.
No, they see, the thing is he pointed out this point of gracefulness and being able to properly, you know, think of everybody nicely, keep a nice, pleasant mood. So once you get into all those numbers, then it starts to get very difficult. I remember one devotee telling me he always thought it was interesting. It was a devotee in New York, and he always observed, because he at Mangal Arati he'd stand right in the front, and you know, then generally in those the Western temples, or you know, where you have a building or a house, and where the pujari standing, where the first person taking darshan, the difference is about, you know, about 18 inches or 2 feet, you know. So he used to find it quite amusing that he could hear the pujari counting as they're offering, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Then the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, like that. So that whole idea of the rules and regulations is to make regularity so that we don't, depending upon our mind, one day we're in a great mood, Krishna conscious, you know, bhavanas, you know, oozing from every pore, and we do a 5-hour artik, and then the next day we're busy thinking of something, we got to get off there quick, and we do a 30-second artik, and so it's to regulate that it's given. Therefore, the rule is mainly it's the lamp is the most important for the numbers, because Krishna likes the lamps. And then just to set a proper, you know, proper standard that it's always the same. And then these others then are just waved, because they don't, waving incense, waving argya, cloth of flowers does not add. This is, one may ask, well, why the lamp? Why the lamp, all these circles are important? Because incense, whether you wave it or not wave it, it doesn't add anything to its presentation. Neither flowers, nor cloth, nor argya. Right? Argya, of course, has something is there. But it doesn't add anything to its presentation. But with the lamp, is as you bring it around, you know, as you're going up, you know, then the flames have a tendency to go down a little bit. You know? And as you come down the other side, you know, as you're coming from the top to the bottom in your circle, you see that the flames get bigger, right? Then I would see when Srila Prabhupada was offering artik to Krishna Balaram, as he would come around, he would stop then, you know, just suddenly stop just where the feet were. And then one would see that the flames would like flicker bigger. And then he would, as soon as that would happen, he would move it up to the chest and it would flick again, then up to the face, it would flick again, then go around. So he would stop at each of these places, like that. So it adds to the presentation by taking the lamp and offering it in these circles. While the other paraphernalia, it doesn't, if you hold it still or not, it doesn't do anything to the paraphernalia. It looks better if you move it in circles. But it's not that it adds anything to the presentation of the particular item itself. But the lamp, the wicks actually flicker more, so that it becomes very, very nice in that way. Then, okay.
I've often been asked, Maharaj, if people say, you know, you Hare Krishna say, you should know and understand what you do, and you're not just doing a ritual, you should know the meaning. So what is the meaning of the items that you offer during an Aarti? You know, the flower, the incense, the lamp. What are you actually doing? Krishna and Balaram come home from the forest, so then the residents come out and they're examining the beauty of the Lord's body with the lamp and looking to see, oh, has he suffered any scratches from thorns, and is, and they're actually examining the wonderful form of the Lord with the lamp. So, you know, people say, well, what is the conch mean? Why do you present the cloth? What is the actual? I mean, standard answer is, well, Krishna likes it. And he has done since time immemorial. So that's also good enough for us. He likes it. If he liked something else, we'd eat something else. But many people think, is there a symbology? Is the incense representing smell, which is the earth element, and something else is representing the other element?
Those come in. Means you have different levels of explanation. We got into that the other day. Is ultimately goes back to the original form of it will be the rasa form. So that these will go back into the pastimes. And but they're there in the pastimes because Krishna's organized it like that. So the basically what it is this artik is what's called niranjana. Like that, offering various auspicious things and all that for, you know, removing bad influences and things like that. And those generally are from, you know, when Krishna goes out, people see him, they may think nicely of him, may not think nicely of him. So just for his protection and all those things, then they offer these lamps. It's a kind of a subhadrishti, it's like... It's auspicious and it removes bad influences. So specifically the lamp. That's why the lamp is the central feature out of here, because it's for that purpose. So when he comes back, then they're removing, to remove anything that's there. Because one may say, well, God doesn't require. But the point is in Vrindavan, then they don't think of him as God, you know. Otherwise, they wouldn't worry about him at all. You know, he can take care of himself. He's a big boy. He's been around before anybody else, so he can surely take care of himself. But so that the pastime element is always there. So that aspect of Niranjana is that it removes these things. Then in the specific, like in most of your Pancharatrik artiks, it's only lamps. They don't offer anything else. Or they'll offer a lamp and the conch. Like that. But generally you'll see it's just different kinds of lamps. You know, single wicks and five wicks and, you know, more and all kinds of different things. And there's one where they offer, it's very interesting. It's like a torch with a handle on it. They just put all the cloth and everything like you'd make for a torch. And that's lit. And so it makes a huge flame. Like that. And then, you know, different ones, you know, shaped like kurmas or sudarshans or all different shapes, different kinds, different numbers, like that. And so that's generally what an artik is. It's mainly that. Now, in the one what we follow, then it adds in more items. It's more followed, you see, in north. And especially it seems to be amongst the Gaudiyas, or then he has more of these items in there. That brings in the worship, like Banumarj explains as Rajopachar, is, you know, worship of the king, kingly worship. So then you add in the chamaras, the fans, the flowers, the argya, incense, all these different things get added in. So the incense is just for a nice smell, create a nice atmosphere. So we use incense because that's the easiest thing for us to deal with. The old style is that you have a large lamp it has a big bowl, like a big camphor lamp. And in there you keep coals. And then when it's time, that's kept there, and when it's time for the artik, you take some frankincense and that, and, you know, other kinds of these kind of herbs for burning, and sprinkle on the coals, and then you offer that lamp. So it purifies the air, purifies the atmosphere, gives a nice smell. whole thing is, you know, so many of these things are for purification. So the frankincense is purifying. It purifies all the breathing and all these kind of things like that. It's very pleasant, creates a nice atmosphere. If it's especially, there's different ones you can use in different seasons. So that will also be very good for the health and all these things like that. But nowadays we use what is technically is you know, agarbatti. Bati means just like a, you know, the stick. Yeah, how do you say? Bati is like, it makes a single lamp. So it used to be, it's called agarbatti because before the stick used inside was from the agar tree. So it itself had a very good smell and everything like that. Nowadays, at best, you'll get a sliver of chandan tree, but generally it'll be bamboo. Like that. So it's lost something. And before then, even if they were done, all those special masalas that they would use dry and put into the coals, they soak them in oils and other things, make them wet, and they roll them onto the stick, onto the agar stick, under the bati of agar. And then drying those, and you can light those. Just means you don't have to worry about getting the coals ready and then putting that. Means and constantly tending it. This, you just light one, it'll burn for, it has its own coals, it'll burn for a long time. Then, so that takes care of that aspect. So it's and nowadays then they're machine made with chemicals. So it smells, but it's lost its medicinal aspects, medicinal and purifying aspects that the original offering would have. You know, so it makes it harder to understand its connection. You know, while before it was purifying, then the lamp is for purifying, to remove any bad, I can't remember the Sanskrit for it, but the bad, any, those who are unpleasant thoughts by others, some jealousness, enviousness, some bad feelings, the lamp removes all that. Like that, there's many, many of these that they use in the Vedic culture. You know, like there's one that's used in the, after Krishna takes his bath, Janmasthami Tithi Vidhi, then he's bathed there. So everybody's there in the audience. Generally one expects everyone there will be very enthusiastic to see the Lord and all that. But sometimes we see someone is may not be, you know. So then those bad feelings go on to the Lord. So of course the Lord, nothing can, he's the supreme pure. He can purify someone who is impure. But as service, then, after he's done his basic, you know, we dried him and put on his clothes. I think he does his tilak and his Brahmin thread and that. Then they bring some mustard seeds with neem leaves. And that's shown above Krishna's head with the mantra to remove any of those bad feelings that may have been there during that abhishek and all that. Then those are disposed of. Best is to throw them into fire. Because then when they crack, then that's when they all, whatever, the mustard seeds, and they absorb all that. And then when they crack, then they're all sent off. Like that. So that aspect, that's another one. Like this, there's many. Like that, different herbs, spices, mantras, and like that.
So all derived from actual Krishna Leela.
Yeah, yeah. You'll see they do all these different things. Like when the gopis, when Krishna comes back, then they go out and offer lamps, Niranjana it's called. Then when they also in here, Sanatana Goswami mentioned his Maha Niranjana and things like that. Then when that Trinavarta demon took Krishna, then when they got Krishna back, then they would take the cow tail. And with dust from raised from the hooves of the cows, they would sprinkle Krishna with that and do nyasas and all kinds of things for his protection and to remove evil influences and all these things. So it's all within a similar category. So they would always be doing these things for Krishna. That's part of the someone who is that dear, that intimate. So you'll generally see that those in the parental or in the conjugal ras, they like to. It's from this aspect I'd like to offer. Friends, you know, may or may not be so important because you're always with them and, you know, nothing can ever happen to your friend, you know. But the parental and the conjugal are always worried that something will happen. Servants also get into this. You know, you'll see that very much happen again. You know, so the worship of him because he's the Lord, and we want to offer the best and do the best for him and things like that. But it's from another angle. Now it's switched from the intimacy to the yarn reverence. Like that. So that takes care of lamps. Then you can also offer more than one lamp. You know, it's like the camphor lamp generally will only be used at the noontime because of its cooling nature. The fire is cooling. While the other lamps will be used at all the artics. Well, you know, with the giwiks. But at festival days, special days, you can offer more than one lamp if you have many different kinds of lamps. Like here, many times they'll offer, regular with five, well, sometimes a single, then five. Then they'll offer these special, like Sudarshans or Kurmas with special, bigger numbers, a special shape. Then they'll offer this one with 28 wicks, or sometimes they have like that with 108 wicks, so many stacked up like that.
And it should always be ghee.
Best is ghee. It mentioned in the Shastra it should be ghee. If you can't get ghee, then you have to use pure oil. You know, it hasn't been used before. You know, it's not like you cook the samosas in it and then you dump the ghee wicks in there and stuff.
Because when Jagadananda brings that sandal oil to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he says, if I use this, people will think I'm a Dari Sannyasi. But then he says to him, why don't you give it to Jagannath for burning in his lamps? Of course, that means the lamps just give it light, I think.
I think so. No. It's like, it's for the same like in the yagya. Yagya should be ghee. If you don't have, then you can use pure oil. It's generally like sesame oil or like that. But coconut, sesame. Specifically those two are considered, good. But never safflower. Safflower is like considered in the Vedic standpoint is like not used. Mm. You don't cook with it. Lord is not overly worried about his polyunsaturates because it doesn't digest properly. Mm. It's just like potato skins, Remember there's that myth your mother always told you about all the vitamins and minerals in the potato skins, the baked potato? Well, potato skins don't digest. They may be full of vitamins and minerals. Like a block of wood is probably full of vitamins and minerals, but we cannot digest them. So safflower oil may be the highest in, all kinds of polyunsaturates and all this and that and so many things, but it's not very well digested. So it has creates interesting burps and other such gaseous emissions from the body. And those are highly unpalatable by the Lord and other such purified souls. So it's not used like that. Of all the oils, Shastra specifically mentions safflower. Mm. Like that. Even sunflower is okay. But safflower is like, it's like Brahmins don't touch this stuff.
And mustard oil?
Mustard oil is okay. I would put it after sesame and coconut. Mm. Like that. It's a pleasant. It's good, let's say winter time. It's good for the soot from it. When it burns, the smoke it creates is good for the eyes. But I don't think the flame is that bright. The mustard flame is quite yellowish, reddish, kind of like that. I think the sesame and the coconut make a much more white, a brighter flame, like that.
Find here sometimes you buy this bottled ghee they sell, and when you make wicks it virtually doesn't burn, so I don't know whether it's buffalo ghee or whatever.
Well, it's definitely not petrol.
And it just relied it in it went.
Maybe dalda or something. Mixed with dalda. Dalda is a vegetable ghee. In the West, what do they call that?
Margarine.
No, not margarine. hydrolyzed, I think it's hydrolyzed vegetable oils. Mm. In America, there's a company called Crisco. They're big in that stuff. So in India, they call that vegetable ghee. So sometimes when you go to places and they say cook in pure ghee, it means dalga. It means that. It doesn't mean cow ghee or buffalo ghee. It means vegetable ghee.
Do they discriminate between cow and buffalo ghee more?
The scriptures, yes.
The commercial companies, don't
they? Well, you have to look on the can. Mm. If you see only cows in the can, generally means there's the cow ghee inside. If you see a melange of cows and buffaloes peacefully grazing in the fields on the can, it generally means a mix. Like that. You know, so you can, if you know your ghee, you can tell the difference.
The scripture says probably the buffalo
is the no-no. It can be, I'm not sure. Specifically, yogurt is the main thing for, because Krishna also had a lot of buffaloes. Mm. It mentions when he would come back, then they would look like the Jamuna and the Ganga. You know, so the buffaloes would look like the Jamuna River and the cows would look like the Ganga. And they would be divided down the middle like that. So there must have been quite a few buffaloes. But if you make it into yogurt, then it's all right. And then one of the, generally in India, at least for your salty cooking, salty preparations, your savories and sabjis and those kind of things, you get the best flavor from ghee that's made from the cream off of the yogurt, because it's slightly soured. You know, just like in vegetables, you like to put you generally like to put tomato or put some amchur, some dry mango, green mango powder, or, you know, a little yogurt, something to create a little sourness, or dunya, coriander powder. Like that. These things are popular because it adds a little bit of sourness. So the ghee made from the yogurt is slightly sour. So it gives it's a nicer flavor for the vegetables than that. But for the sweets, then you want to use what's made straight from the butter. You take the cream, make that into butter, and then make that into ghee. The other way is you make the milk into yogurt, then you churn that and get the butter from that and make that into ghee. So generally that ghee will be kind of like a grayish yellow instead of just a nice bright yellow. Mm. Like that. And that, so that'll make a difference. But it's preferred for smell and taste, then the buffalo ghee does not smell or taste very good. But the yogurt is fine. So it's best to stick to cow ghee. Like that. And as far as I know, the Shastras, when it says ghee, it means cow ghee. It doesn't mean anything else. The yogurt can be cow or buffalo. Like that. And milk must be cow milk. Like when you bathe the deities in milk or make milk preparations, that should be cow's milk.
In the mud of bark, you would hopefully be using cow yogurt as well.
Yeah, it's best. It's best. Cow yogurt for that is always the best. You know, but I could check, but what I know of, the buffalo yogurt is not, it's no problem. It doesn't have any funny taste or is considered good. But for the deity, it's best to stick to everything from the cow's milk. Then, so that's lamps. And argya, that is in a conch. The water that sits in a conch becomes purified. Like that. That is the special. It's purified, can remove diseases. So it's very special. Water from the conch is considered very special. So now there's water in the conch, and then other special items will be put. Let's see when it mentions it here. Argya, flowers, white rice, barley, sesame, darba. Darba is purifying, like that. Kusa tips is also purifying. Ganda, white mustard seeds. Or you can use yogurt, milk, white rice, kusa tips, barley, sesame. Oh, and white mustard seeds. Or sandalwood paste. Like that. So generally one sees that they're all like purifying and auspicious items. Barley, sesame, these are all havisha. They're all items of sacrifice. White mustard seeds. All these things are used for sacrifice. They're purifying and these things. So you put that in a conch and then you have a very pure mixture. It means not only is it pure, it can purify things. And it's medicinal. So again, here we're removing any bad elements or things like that. So then that is offered. So generally, offering of argya in the conch shell is only reserved for very, very special personalities. Argya, Madhuparka, these are only very special personalities come. You know, the spiritual master, Vyasadeva, the Supreme Lord, like that. This is what the argya is for. So it must be a very special personality must come to offer argya. And it's made into its own ceremony. It's a very special ceremony. So now in the argya that's being shown above the head, because what is happening is if the person comes, you will show it, but you'll now, when you finish receiving them with the argya, then you will pour a little bit into their hand. You know, generally they'll receive it on the ends of the fingers, not the tips, you know, within the area of the fingers. Then that will be then sprinkled on their head. They'll sprinkle it on their own head. This way they purify themselves. So if someone's just come from outside, then they purify themselves. So here you're offering argya for that purification. And it's the most respectful way of, you know, it's considered very, very high class. Like anyone you may wash the feet, you know, any respectable person, but to offer argya then is even amongst those special persons, these persons are special. Like that. So for the artik, it doesn't need to be so fancy. It can just be plain water or scented with a little rose water or some rose petals or like that. Some very simple. But for the abhishek and the bathing and the main puja, the 16 items, then how either plain like this or how much you can put inside according to the different things that are mentioned there. Because in any case, the conch itself will purify the water. So even if you don't put anything more purifying in it, the conch itself will do that. So this is what is shown above the head because of that aspect of being sprinkled on the head. Same time as it's sometimes mistaken for a hand wash because it'll be poured onto the hands after the offering. Like that. So they'll think it's for washing hands. So there was a time, at least I say was a time, there may still be a time going on, when devotees would think that the padyam was washing the feet, the argya was washing the hands, and the achman was washing the mouth. But the argya is an aspect of reception. It actually has nothing to do with washing the hands. Because you're just sprinkling a little bit on the hand, the fingers, some drops to sprinkle on your own head. Just like after we offer to the deities, we come and throw it on the devotee's head. One may say, well, that's just, we're just giving it to the devotees. So then why don't we just throw the lamps, the wicks onto the devotees' heads and throw the flowers onto the devotees' heads? No, the devotees smell with their nose, like, you know, Krishna will smell. The lamps are offered, we take the lamps like this. So it's being accepted basically in this, like Krishna eats the prasad and then we put it in the mouth like that. So it's basically the same as what would be done for the deity like that. Though the Lord is the enjoyer and we are the taking the remnants.
I remember in those early days we but tell somebody this food has been offered to the Lord, so you should eat everything. It's transcendental. And one Sunday they'd also put a offered robes on this one.
Well, that's probably why he became a devotee. Eat everything. He ate the paper plate. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good thing there were no bay leaves or something, you know, munching away on those. Also. Chilies. Prasad. So the argya is argya. It's not bathing the Lord. That's called snania, snanium. It's a different item. It may come from a conch shell, it may have water in it, but it's two different things. You know, like that. That is an interesting thing. Like, just like it may come from the drawer and it may be cloth, but a dhoti and a shirt are two different things. Like that. So one must be able to, as I mentioned before, one must be able to understand these subtleties to tell the difference between a bath, snanium, and argya, which is argya, is a reception, a aspect of respectful reception and purification.
When an exalted personality comes, I saw Bill Pagetta one time when we were doing a ceremony, like there were the umbrellas, but he seemed to be dipping a cowtail again into the argya and sprinkling
could do that just to purify. It means that you want to purify the place. You may just put flowers, rose petal, or you may sprinkle with water. He wants to make it more pure, so he's sprinkling with conch water and a cow tail. Like that. It's just how much you want to take it, you can go. It's just like hold an umbrella. So you can just have a simple umbrella, or you can have a festival umbrella, or it can be embroidered with pearls, or, you know, with gold jari, and like that. You can always expand what you know. It's just like you'll see in many times the Sri Vaishnavas, when they do this Padyamargyamachmaniyam, as the Lord goes on Parikram, then they don't just take the Achman cup and take out of there. Another devotee has a pot, and has two pots, you know, one for catching water, one for pouring water, and they pour the water, and while it's flowing in the space, the other pujari is sticking the spoon into that, taking the water and offering it to the Lord, because flowing water is considered pure. Like that, water is purified by moving. So it's like considered, we got pure water. We have, they'll take from the Kaveri sacred river, but now it's flowing Kaveri river for the Lord. You know, because in your Achman cup, it's not really flowing, you know, like this. So then it's poured, and then you get the difference, like that. So you can take how much you know, how much comes natural to you, how much for the situation. There's that limited expansion. But the basic thing is we're just trying to get devotees to just do the fundamental principle of what's going on rather than dropping it because we chant Hare Krishna and we don't care for all these things. Like that. So it's not a bath. And then the cloth afterwards is not now some towel to dry yourself off after having just taken a bath in front of everybody with the clothes on. It is an offering of cloth. Like that is fresh cloth is offered like that. Something is, cloth is being offered. You know, maximum if you want to connect it with the argya is after the argya, then you have something you can dry your hands with. But generally, you don't necessarily need to do that. It's not considered important. So it's cloth. It's cloth. It's like, so on a special festival day or that, you could offer more. You know, not a big. You don't bring out a roll of cloth or some new huge embroidered sari. It's just a small little cloth like that. Then the flowers, then our flowers is pushpanjali that's being offered. So either around the body or just to the feet. And then the chamara we discussed before is to create a nice atmosphere and get rid of bugs and all that. And the fan is to create a suitable breeze, pleasant breeze. So So it should be fanned in such a way that you actually get a proper, you know, pleasant breeze. You should not create a storm. You should not blow things off the altar. Or if you have lamps, you should not consider the artik was successful because you blew them all out. Like that. So one has to see, you know, that pleasantness, gracefulness and all that, but understanding what you're doing with it. That is important.
But back to that chamara mark with the bone in it.
Hmm.
So the body sometimes can't understand the nature, the purity of that bone because it's severed from the body. Now they may understand the hair is spiritual, so why don't we just use the hair?
Well, devotees could use the hair if they're willing to spend the time and pay the money. But in these days, you know, nobody wants to bother with that. They want to walk into a shop. So those same shops that sell the chamaras like that, they will also shave the tails and weave that hair onto a strip and then tie that onto the chamara stick for you. But that takes time and it's more expensive. And because if you really want to get something good, instead of just one chamara tail in a chamara, you'll probably end up with a few more. Because the nature, you weave it and all that. But you get something very full and fluffy like that. It doesn't just hang like the other one. It's much more full like that. So in South, they always do that. They don't leave it on the tail. They always shave the tail. But in North, they just stick with the tail.
And I know this margin of...
See, because the point is the tail is inside the skin.
Right.
And the skin is pure. So you're not really... You don't come in contact with it like that. But if you're worried about that, then you can just get the chamaras that are, you know, shaved up chamaras.
And then I see 90% of yaks actually have a black tail, but I heard for us, we don't use the black chamaras.
No, the black's generally used by tantrics. They prefer the shaktas. They prefer the black, you know, like that. But the Pancharatra prefers the white. Though many of the Pancharatra takes from... See, is a Pancharatra is a mix of Vedic and Tantric aspects. Tantric means ritual. Because the Vedic is less on ritual, it's more on mantra. It means they do a lot of rituals with the Vedic. But the actual ritual gets done by the chanting of a mantra. You chant the mantra, and with minimal paraphernalia or actual physical ritual, you know, movement or that, you affect something. Like you install a pot just by mantra. You don't have to do much with it. I think the Samaveda is 8-3 mantras. You know, you put the pot, you put the coconut, you put the water. I think that's it. No, the pot, the water. Oh, you put the asan, you know, the rice, you put the pot, and you put the water. And then the coconut and all that just, you know, goes along with it. It's just part of it. While the Yajurveda then use 8 mantras. But I think they're shorter mantras. And there's no installation or anything. It's automatic. The person's already installed everything with that. While in the tantric systems, then where it mainly is working on, there's more ritual. So there's tantric, sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. Tantra just means ritual. Mantra means the sound, the shabda, and tantra means ritual. That's why it says mantra tantra pur. Yeah, mantra tantra puranadi. Huh? Yeah. So mantra tantra puranadi. So it's your mantra, your ritual. So nowadays, Tantra always carries the connotation of shakta rituals, like that, but it doesn't necessarily. It's like a general term. You know? So then, yeah, so the Pancharatra will take from the Sattvic Tantras, like the Gautamiya Tantra and like that, and it'll mix that with Vedic mantras and rituals. So it'll be a mix of both. That's generally the Pancharatra. So you'll see some aspects seem more Tantra, more ritual-based, and some aspects are more mantra-based. And generally there's always mantra with everything, but it's you use bigger mantras instead of like short bijas. So like when you're installing with the tantric system, then it may take 24 bij syllables and this and that to complete the setting up of the pot. It takes a lot. Because the tantra then it gets more metaphysical. So they connect everything, you know, with the earth, the water, the fire, the air, the ether, the mind, all the 24 elements and the 14 planetary systems and all the different things like that. They get, because especially in the Shaiva and the Devi Tantra, all they worship is the material world. They're only dealing with the material energy. So everything they connect back to the material energy. While for us, the metaphysical isn't as important because we're connecting everything back to the spiritual realm. Like that. So the metaphysical explanations for us aren't the main ones. They're there. And like sometimes they say, well, the artik is, you know, like you said, is the sense, and then you have the lamps is the sight, and then the water, the taste, and then all these different things. But it doesn't exactly fit in like that, you know, like that. But whatever.
And if it did, that would just be peripheral.
It's very peripheral, because that's... But many times, one who has grown up in a Western scientific culture, they consider those to be of substance. Mm-hmm. But Krishna mentions in the Bhagavatam, in the Chaturshloki, that whatever is not in connection with him is, even though you think it's substance, it's not. Like that. It has to be in connection with Krishna. So the more substantial ones are what it's actually the proper purpose of it, what it's doing in the relationship of spiritual culture. Like that. Those are always the more important. It pleases Krishna, and then how it pleases Krishna in the pastime. What is the exchange that is there? You know? Like that. And if you study, of course, one studies more, then one can give more of these metaphysical answers, you know. Okay, he's received by the pure water of the conch. Or why the conch? It purifies the water. Or why does the conch purify the water? I'm sure there's some reasons for that. Some benediction, some stories there in some Purana somewhere. You've come across? No. You know, so all these things are there. Okay. Yeah, it mentions that the lamps generally will go out immediately after the offering them, because otherwise they have a tendency to go out if you wait until the end of the artik. But either the flowers and the argya water can go out, or it can remain. Because many times in main temples, the pujaris themselves will distribute those things. So they won't give them out at that time. Now generally when the artik is over, then they'll come, they themselves will throw the water. Like that. And the flowers, and they'll give out from the altar there. But otherwise, it can go out and other devotees can distribute it. Then, this argya, remember when I joined, it was put in this little, like, rose water sprinkling gadget. And then, while the Nisshinga prayers were going on, you would come and sprinkle it on top. Somebody would walk around and sprinkle it on everyone's head. But they would sprinkle it on the top of their head. Then in India, then generally just the pujaris, they throw it, and then it will fall, you know, on your head, but you bend forward a little because it's coming from the front, like that. And you'll see some people, it's not uncommon that they will, you know, extend their cloth a little bit, you know, the lower cloth, or bend the knees a little bit so that their feet are covered. So when the argya water is thrown, it doesn't land on their feet. You see that sometimes. The pujari also can move. It's not that he has to throw it just from the altar. They can also move up into the devotees and throw it so everybody gets it, and then go back down. That's also a possibility. Otherwise, the devotees can move forward as much as possible and it can be thrown. It's not a rule that it must be sprinkled on the back of someone's head during the artik so they don't know what's happening, as is very common in many of the countries that are on a western, I guess what we say, longitude, and yeah, then here. That somehow that's developed, but that's not important. It just should go on the head. Okay. Okay, so we should probably end here for Chulan. Today's Wednesday. Okay, yeah. So we'll continue and just finish the artik tomorrow, then we will move on to the main worship, the 16 items. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.